Hello and welcome to Secondhand Film Critics, your favorite source for mildly pretentious, semi-uneducated, and highly unqualified opinions on movies. I'm Kayla, and I am here with my co-host,
Nifty Noah.
Yeah, I feel like we need
my stripper name.
We need a stripper name. Here, wait.
Howard is not a good stripper name.
Wait. I'm gonna look up a stripper name generator.
The Secondhand Strip Critics.
Oh God.
Naughty Noah. That's a better one. Magic is just such a good adjective. Okay, this is on what is your magic mic stripper name?
Oh.
So my name. You put in my first and last name, and I have to pick a costume from sexy cop, sexy firefighter, doctor, cowboy, tuxedo, soldier, or chef. I am going to go doctor.
Okay.
This button I click says make the magic happen. My name is Divine Wood.
Okay, I'm doing mine, and I'm
gonna... Did you find the website?
I did. I'm okay. Choosing, sexy cowboy obviously, mm-hmm. And my name is Smooth Dingo.
What's your signature song?
My signature song is I'm a Slave for You by Britney Spears.
Mine is Untitled, then in parentheses, How Does It Feel by D'Angelo, so... Divine Wood and what was yours?
Smooth Dingo.
Ah, great. Wow, what a great way to start this episode. This is our long-awaited, by probably someone, episode on the Magic Mike films. The first and the second, and now the newly released Magic Mike's Last Dance. The trilogy that has walked the world for the last decade. That's kind of weird. It's technically a decade old series because 2012 was the first one. So it's
spans
a long time
between movies.
Yes, yes. It's funny because the first movie uses music that you would expect from like 2012, and then they keep using music that I feel like would be used
would
in
be
a 2012,
in 2012
movie.
Yeah,
but we're in 2023 now.
I thought that in the new one they played AWOL Nation's. Who does Sail? AWOL Nation? Is that their song?
I don't know. I just feel like the music that they play is just not the music I would hear in if I were to go to a male strip show. I would not hear the music that they played in this movie.
Yeah,
this new one.
I would think not. I mean, maybe...
But I'm not a frequenter of male strip shows, so I don't know.
No, I'm not either.
If you have been to a recent one, then let us know what songs that you heard. Maybe we're wrong. I just don't feel like Genuine is going to be, like, at the top of the playlist of many of the shows you go to now. Before we get into the great trilogy of the 2010s and 2020s, let's go to our answers we got to last week's question of the week. We asked, what would you do if you were stuck in a time loop? Because we talked about the 30th anniversary of Groundhog Day. So, you know, we see all the stuff that Phil does in his time loop. But everyone's different. Everyone will have different goals for their own time loop. So let's just look at one of the ones we got on Spotify from Michael. This is funny because it actually does not answer the question. He says, unrelated to the question because I don't know how to answer, but the groundhog in Quebec died on Groundhog Day this year, and I thought you should know. So that's really sad.
Groundhog Day?
I guess so. Does that mean, are there multiple groundhogs?
I mean, there must be. I know, like, the main, like, American groundhog is...
In Philadelphia.
Is in... Yeah, so maybe, I guess... Canada does one?
I guess, yeah. I didn't know that there was a Quebec groundhog.
So did he, like, come out and saw his shadow and then was like, all right, deuces.
Okay, Quebec groundhog. Fred LaMarmotte, found dead February 2nd, 2023, was a groundhog located in Quebec whose behavior used to prove. Wow, yeah, Fred Lamamar. He has his own Wikipedia page. Yeah, from 2011.
So
he's
did
been
they?
Predicting.
Did
he? Does
he
not have a prediction in 2023, so he didn't predict this year.
Okay, so it looks like a child of his stood in as a replacement.
Oh man, that's so sad.
Imagine like. Waking up to do the Groundhog Day ceremony and you find out your groundhog's dead. So it looks like Wharton Willie.
Oh,
was the
yes.
One who...
Is that another stripper name right there? Wharton Willie?
I mean, hey, Punxsutawney Phil could be a stripper name.
Wait, Groundhog showed no vital signs when the organizer of the annual February 2nd tradition tried to wake him from hibernation. That is, imagine being that guy. You go to wake the groundhog, and then he's just dead.
I feel like that would be a great, like, sitcom episode. Like, the episode where, like, a Parks and Rec
Wait,
kind of thing.
I think this was not hit the groundhog's kid. It was just a kid wearing a groundhog hat. It was called up to the stage and handed a stuffed toy groundhog and asked for his prediction. That's what this article says. So it was just
what?
Like a kid. So they made a kid. And a
How
kid,
was this not
gave,
national news? This is the funniest the thing I've ever heard.
They gave the kid a groundhog. It was like, just predict the winter, bud.
This is crazy.
Wait, there's a somber, dramatic announcement video. The event organizer opened his speech by emphasizing how life could be so uncertain. And this year, the unfortunate thing happened as their famous spring predictor groundhog Fred passed away.
So, they chose a kid to stand in for Fred. It said that the guy pulled a stuffed marmot from Fred's log cabin and handed it to a child who decided whether spring would be coming early. And the king said, spring is delayed.
Dang. That is a wild story.
That is that, like crazier than just the groundhog, like just dying. Like that is, I mean, I guess... They had to be like, well, what are we going to do? I guess the
best... Yeah, everyone's there. Imagine being that kid, and that's like when you go to like your college orientation, and they're like, what's your name? And share one fact about you. And they're like, my name is whatever. And one year, I was the groundhog that predicted the weather in Groundhog Day. Wow. That's a... Thank you, Mike, for that for
yeah,
that
information.
That was great.
What a great way to start the episode.
We have Noah here who said... learn and study everything I've ever wanted to learn. Also want to watch a lot of movies and cartoons, which I feel like is kind of what Phil did, at least the first half. He did the first half towards the end of the movie. I didn't see him watch a lot of TV, but I guess it's like they didn't really have as many, like you couldn't like pick what you wanted to watch.
Yeah,
and
I mean, if it's
cable
then
it's
like
the same
programming.
Do you just watch like every, make sure you watch like, maybe he did that like every day. He went through like, okay, I'm going to watch channel one all the way through today. And like, he got to know every channel.
I would do that.
Yeah, there's what we would do. And then I think we also got one on Instagram, right?
Yeah. Zach Smith said, I would gamble, play high stakes Texas Hold'em. That's funny. That's a good point.
That's a good idea.
But like, you wouldn't be able to keep the money.
Yeah, I guess it's just like you see how good you can get, and then once you finally break free of the time loop, then
you,
can, like,
you use your poker skills. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Just thinking the long game. I like
I
it.
I feel like it would be a good way like to develop a really horrible gambling addiction though.
It would. Yeah, cuz you would get so used to having no consequences.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if Phil could have done that because I just don't think Punxsutawney probably had a very like big gambling scene.
Yeah, no, maybe major casinos in
depending on where you got. Where would you want to get time looped?
Yeah, I feel like definitely not a small town. Like it would have to be like a city. Like I would hope if I get time looped, I was in like a city, maybe like somewhere in Europe.
Yeah. Yeah, like
with a
somewhere
lot of
where
like museums.
There's a lot of things around to do.
Right? Yeah, and things that you're not like used to, like things that are new and fresh.
Well, I feel like if you got time loop today too, there are a lot more options available to you than like it would take you a lot longer to get to the point at the end of Groundhog Day that he got to.
Well, and hey, you could take your Netflix anywhere you get time loop because you're only there for one day and
Heck
not
yeah.
30. So you gotta check in with the home TV.
Look at that. Netflix finally figured out a way around a loophole for the Netflix new rule. Thank you to everyone who answered. We will have another episode. Maybe we should ask this question, like, what would be your stripper name? Would be a great...
No one is going to answer
a
that.
Great question. We'd give them the website, use this, and what would be your name? That's a great website also. Like, shout out to Zimbo, because that's a really fun... I like how the name is, like, the button you click to says, make the magic happen. It's just a really good, a great website design. All right, let's get into our first film here. We're kind of dubbing this as a we've never seen for these first two movies, since they are pretty big, especially in like film Twitter circles. Like, I feel like they're talked about quite a bit more than you would expect them to be, since they're just like really some, like, they're decently big movies for their time, but they're not like Lord of the Rings or like any like what you would expect, really big
sure.
movies that you hadn't ever seen. Like, but for some reason, these are kind of like, in the circles we're in, I guess, big gaps in your film watching.
Yeah, we have a lot of friends that really like these movies.
Yeah, which is, hopefully they're not listening to this episode. Okay, so Magic Mike number one from 2012, the OG, the one that started it all. do you want to read the synopsis I have here? I think I got the first two of these from Google, but then for the new one, I had to write one because there was not, like, it actually wasn't even right. Like, for the third one, it said, like, after a job gone wrong, Mike loses his job, which is not like, like after, like, a drug deal gone wrong or something. I'm like, so that's not what happened in the third one.
Yeah,
so I had to write one for the third one.
He also didn't lose his job. He left his job, but.
Anyway, let's just read
this
first one here.
By day, Mike makes ends meet any way he can. Handyman jobs, detailing cars, or designing furniture. But nighttime is when Mike really gets to display his many talents. He's the hot headliner in an all-man review. Mike sees potential in a 19-year-old he dubs the Kid and decides to take him under his wing, instructing him in the tricks of the trade. However, Mike soon learns there's a downside to the stripper lifestyle when it threatens his romance with the Kid's sister. Dun, da,
I feel like it's also there's a downside when he realizes he can't get a loan from the bank as well. Like, I feel like that's more his downside. Like, the romance comes later, but it's first, like, he just can't get ahead in what he wants to do with his life is really where the conflict starts. So this was movie. Was partly inspired, not like, I don't think many of the events, but like, I guess, like, yeah, I think the conception by Channing Tatum's experience as a male stripper in Tampa when he was 18 years old. So I guess he probably would have experienced more of what the kid's point of view. Which has probably triggered a real early midlife crisis for him when he had to play like the aging stripper, even, which is so funny when they, like, in the movie, they call him, as they dubbed him as, like, the veteran, like, the washed-up guy, when he looks like, in any other, like, job, he would be, like, the new guy. It's just very funny. So that's, I guess, one of the main conceptions, and I think that's why, from the first movie, he's been pretty involved in making these movies and, like, producing them. And
I also love how they're, like, in the first one, they're, like, he's like, I don't want to be a 40-year-old stripper. And he's like 40 and still stripping now.
Right, yeah. So multiple scenes and song choices. There's not a lot on this movie, but one thing I thought was interesting is that multiple scenes and songs that are, like, just not in the script, and they added a lot of stuff as they went. So, like, the Matthew McConaughey's scene at, like, the stripping scene was not in the script. But then they were like, it'd be cool if we had a song. And so they wrote the song, like, the Ladies of Tampa song, like, in like a few hours, and then they gave him a stripping scene. So I thought that was kind of funny. Like, he was just like, guys, I need a scene. And I agree.
I feel like he definitely needs a scene.
He was great in this movie. Apparently there was a big, like, it was a big thing when he didn't get nominated for best supporting actor. I think, like, I could see it's a good supporting performance for sure. The movie had a budget of $7 million, but it made worldwide $167 million. So,
wow,
pretty crazy turn in investment there.
Yeah.
And I feel like $7 million is, like, way better, lower than it looks. Like, it looks like a 20 million, I would say.
Yeah.
Steven Soderbergh, always good with working with a low budget.
I guess, like, they really only had, like, a couple sets, so that probably helped.
Yeah. And a lot of the set, like, they don't have a lot of extras, I feel like. Like, they probably just reuse a lot of the same girls that they have in the thing, like, just everywhere, you know? Like, they don't have to, like,
sure,
I guess, get a ton of extras beyond those people. And they have, like, the one scene on an island, which is just them. So, yeah, I guess it's really, like, they have the club, and then they have their performance stage, and then it's just, like, random places in LA.
Yeah, a couple of their random scenes.
I think they actually do a really good job, like, making that budget stretch. And I was surprised to see this, but it made 14 critics top 10 lists of the year.
Wow.
So I think it definitely got a lot of critical praise at the time. I don't think people were saying it was a masterpiece, but I think people were surprised at I think it was
actually a good movie.
Yeah, it was actually a good movie, independently made. I don't know how much Channing Tatum had, like, done prior to this that people actually liked. Let me see. So his first movie was Coach Carter in 2005.
He was definitely, I think Dear John came out before this.
This was the same year as 21 Jump Street, so I feel like this was probably a big breakout year for him.
Yeah, he was in Dear John, my least favorite movie, in 2010.
He was in G.I. Joe, but I feel like I don't know. This just seems like, to me, this year, this in 21 Jump Street feels like a big, like, door-opening moment. Because after this, you get a lot of bigger and more leading roles in his filmography, for if, like, you look at the list. I like how in 2005, he starred in War of the Worlds, uncredited as Boy in Church. That was his role in War of the Worlds.
Boy in Church.
What a great role for him. So that's really all I have, like, history-wise. So I think it's pretty obvious why
pretty
we hadn't seen
this. Pretty self-explanatory why we
before,
hadn't seen this.
Like, until, like, the last 3 years. And then it's, like, I don't know. It's not, like, something that I was, like, ever, like, really not eager to see. But I guess it just wasn't, like, on the top of my list. I don't know. Like, it just is, like, it's a well-liked movie from 2012, you know? Like, it just feels like something that is on your radar, but it's not going to be the first thing I think of, like, when I'm like, man, I got to start catching up on some of these gaps in my watch list. Like, I feel like there's things that would pop up before that than Magic Mike, you know? So I guess that's why, you know? And you also are just not a Channing Tatum guy, so it's...
Yeah, it's I don't jump to watch Channing Tatum movies, which is funny, because I also just rewatched She's the Man. So Channing Tatum is my most watched actor of this year, but that'll change before the end of the year.
Hey, you never know. Maybe you'll watch more of the Worlds for his Boy in Church
Boy in Church role.
best performance of his career, Boy in Church. I feel like we'll get into this a little bit, but after watching these movies, I actually think he's a really good actor.
He's definitely, I feel like, better in these movies, for
these
sure.
These movies would, I mean, and we'll talk about the second one, but these movies would be all just awful without him. Like, he is controls every scene that he's in. He is, like, especially in this first movie, when I was watching it, he is just so charismatic on screen that I feel like without him in this movie, if there was, like, someone else in this role, like, I don't know, like, Zac Efron, I guess, would have been a similar age, maybe. I just feel like he has something that really just draws you to watch him on screen. I felt the same way in Lost City last year, which was a more recent role, where it's just like something about him on screen is just like, he's so good at just being a charismatic leading man, I feel like. So I was really impressed by his performance in all of three of these, but especially this first one. I feel like this first one is easily my favorite. And it's the one that feels the least like trying to pander to the audience, I guess. Because I feel like the other two definitely feel a little bit more like they're thinking about, oh, what are this will be a good movie to be in the theater, fun to see with a crowd. But this movie really is the one of the only ones that feel like to me like there's a real like depth to it, I guess. So I was pretty impressed by his performance and with the movie overall. I actually really enjoyed this one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I liked the first half of it until it kind of hits the midpoint and switches.
What's the midpoint, would you say?
Yeah, it pretty much switches like right when the kid buys the stuff from...
Oh, the drug. So, like, kind of like when they announce that they're going to...
Because that's pretty much the halfway Miami. Point in the movie. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. At, the, like, the party.
Yeah.
When the guy's like, oh, I'll get you in on this stuff and we can make even more money.
Yeah, I think that's okay. Where, like, I think it loses me a little bit just because I find the other stuff more interesting than the whole... I felt like the drugs just kind of came out of nowhere, and...
I guess I was expecting it, honestly, because I felt like this really follows, like, the... Like, it feels a lot like Boogie Nights to me. Like, they were really trying... I think they used that as a really big skeleton for the movie, because it really feels like the young guy getting involved in, like, this underground scene, and... Like, he's a sensation in the beginning, but then as it goes, he gets more and more pulled under. So the only, like, big, I guess, deviation would be it definitely ends before you would expect the movie to end. If it because it's not focused on the kid as much. Like, if he was the main character, I guess it would have gone further. But I kind of expected there to be, like, a fall from grace kind of thing. So I guess I didn't expect it to be drugs. Maybe I was like, I thought he would maybe just take it too far, like in the stripping thing. Like, cause like in the beginning, his first one, like he kisses someone, which is a no in like their line of work. So I just thought maybe that would be it where he would just like take his influence too far or something. But yeah, maybe it's like, there wasn't really a lot of drugs early on. So it is a little bit like, oh, I guess there's drugs involved now in this world. But yeah.
Yeah, I think overall, like, this movie to me is fine. I don't know, like, I guess I was wanting him to be successful, you know, Channing Tatum.
Yeah.
Like, you watch it and you're like, oh yeah, I want him to, like, start this stupid furniture business. And I want him to, like... connect with this girl and like you kind of
even
like,
though she's so annoying.
Yeah, she is.
I feel
annoying.
Like she's really just annoying.
I didn't like her, but I wanted him to achieve his dreams.
Yeah, I wanted him to be happy. Yeah.
So I think like there's some things in it that I did like. I thought some of the like dance sequences were fine. I definitely don't think this movie is as focused on that as the, like, sequels are. Like, I think they kind of, like, they had the dance scenes, but it wasn't as, like, it was a counterpart to the rest of the movie. Whereas I think in the sequels, those are kind of, like, that's the big deal instead of the story more. Because I think this focuses more on the story and the characters than it does on, like, the dance.
Yeah. I mean, and I think... maybe that's why I like it. I feel like the dancing in this one is good, but it's also, like, it's parsed out throughout the movie. Like, it's separated by different things. Like, so there's dancing really throughout the whole movie, but it's not like the other two where it's, like, the big dance. There's, like, 30 minutes of dance at the end of the first, second one, and the third one. You know? Like, there's, like, it ends with the big dance thing. But I liked how in this one, like, there's dancing throughout it. And it's, like, 3-minute scenes parsed out throughout the film. So I think that is also why I maybe like it's not as like the dancers are as experienced that are in this movie. So it's not like as impressive as I guess like we're talking about the second one, but definitely the third one with like the dancing, like obviously they got much better dancers.
Yeah, they got real dancers, not like actors.
Yeah. But I do think like, I don't know. Something about the first one, I just really liked the parallel between him and the kid, like having that, like the new guy, but also the aging guy. But you can see how like he was probably in a very similar situation, I would assume, when he was that age, and kind of like that cycle that's ongoing. That, because I think like the ending is very abrupt, which is one reason I just, like, one of the negatives, like I feel like the ending is like so abrupt. But I do like how it's like they show the kid taking like the baton, I guess, in the beginning, at the end of the movie, where like he's starting like their big routine and he's starring in the middle. And then you see Mike kind of moving on at the end. And so I feel like I do like the parallel of those two stories working, in like how you see Mike getting disillusioned but the same things are making the other guy more drawn to it. So it's interesting, like the same things are making one person pull away and the other person pushed in. And yeah, I think I liked more how it was more focused on the story, and the dancing was still really, I thought, really entertaining and really well done, but it was like, I guess, integrated into the story more, maybe. So, like, I was more invested in some of the dance scenes because I was more invested into some of the characters that were in them, where in the later ones, it's like, oh, that's a cool dance, but I really don't even know this guy's name, or, like, I don't care about this guy at all. So it's just more, like, cool to see the dance, but it's not, like, actually part of the story.
Yeah. I don't really have anything else to say about this one. I thought it was fine. I'll probably never watch it again.
I will say, I actually think I will probably watch this one again. I think this one is I really like Steven Soderbergh's smaller efforts. Like this, how this is really does feel like, even though they use the budget well, it does feel like a really like intimate kind of scrappy movie, independent movie that they like kind of put together. And I think that he's really good at that stuff. So I definitely really like just the whole vibe of this one. And honestly, I think they should have just not made any more. Like, I'm not going to lie. Like, I think they had some good side characters, like the other friends that were stripping with them. Like, they had like some good little scenes. Mike is a good character. It ended like a little too ambiguously, but also like it kind of leaves it open to you wondering like maybe like what's going to happen next, or feeling like the story will still go on after the credits roll. And I think, yeah, it left me with, I got everything I wanted basically from this first movie, and there should not have been any more. But there was three years later with Magic Mike XXL. Yeah, this is going to be perhaps one of the most controversial segments of the show, just like of our podcast in general. I feel like, I know we have a lot of negative opinions on things, but I feel like there's just overwhelming positive opinions on this movie that we are just not going to feel.
Yeah, it's wild because the first movie, I feel like, generally has on Letterboxd the ratings you would expect it to have. Like, yeah. Some people don't like it as much, some people like it. It feels like a very solid 3 to 4 star movie for a lot of people. Like,
yeah.
People can look at Magic Mike and say, even if they don't like it, yeah, I get it. That's a solid movie.
Yeah, it's like, it feels like a well-made movie, you know? Like, it feels like a real movie that has been made.
Yeah, this one has a startling amount of extremely high reviews. Like, everyone I know that has watched it, there's one person I follow, apart from, like, you and
me.
I,
yeah,
who rated it, like, half a star, and then all the other ratings are at least 3.5 stars, but most of them are like
so many 4.5,
four and a half and 5 stars. And I am sorry to Jordan specifically if you're listening to this.
I'm just sorry to anyone. I feel like I have a lot of people that have rated this really high.
But like, this is, that is, I cannot even comprehend how someone can watch this movie and say, yeah, that's a 4.5 or 5 star movie. That is, it boggles my mind. I like can't even grasp that concept because I thought this movie was so horrible that I just, Yeah, I don't know.
I gotta say, this movie just doesn't feel real. While watching it, I just feel like it's like a movie that you would, like a movie you would see in another movie. That's like, oh yeah, let's, like, it just feels like a fake movie. Like, it doesn't feel like there was a real people making this film. There's no sense of story arc going on. There's nothing really to pull you in and, like, make you keep watching. It's just, like, so boring. And then it ends in such a wild ending, truly.
Yeah,
which we'll get into.
Like, I literally could not understand where the plot was supposed to go. And, like, even halfway through, I think I texted you and I was like, I have no idea what is happening in this movie. And then the last, like, 30 minutes are just... we'll talk about it, but
we'll talk about
it's funny 30. Because when the third one came out and I'm reading reviews about the third one, people are like, oh, this like doesn't have as good or clear of a story as the second one. And I'm like, what story? Tell me, where is the plot? This is like, just there's no plot at all.
It's like they were just like, what scenes will be really cool to make, and they just put all the scenes together, but they didn't really like connect them very well.
It feels like they came up with everything on the spot. Like they're sitting
they're
there,
like, oh, we're at a gas station, we should do
like
a strip scene in
a gas
station
here. Yeah, or like they're sitting around the truck or whatever and they're like, maybe we should improv some dialogue here. What kind of conflict do we think the characters are having right now? Like,
maybe we should have Amber Heard come and be some character that we don't know really where, like, why she's in the story at all.
Yeah, so discombobulated. It's literally like, okay, do you want to read the synopsis?
Sure. And this is also why I was really surprised about this movie, because this synopsis, I feel like, is a good setup. Like, I think the overall, when I read the synopsis, I was like, oh, this looks like a cool idea. Like, it looks like it could be a good movie. So, it's been 3 years since Mike Lanes, also, I don't know why they picked Lane as his last name. Just a weird choice when you can pick anything else. Mike Lanes' retirement from stripping, but the former dancer misses the excitement and feeling of being on stage. Most of all, though, he misses the best friends that he ever had, the crew known as the Kings of Tampa. Opportunity comes knocking when the guys look him up as they travel to Myrtle Beach for a stripper convention. With the promise of outrageous fun, a reinvigorated Mike can't resist the chance to join in and take it off again. Take it off, like,
yes,
your clothes.
His clothes. Yes, I got that. Thank you.
So this movie was confirmed by Channing Tatum in a 2012 Twitter Q&A, and he said they wanted to flip the script and make it bigger. Which could mean a variety of things. Sounds like something you just say when you say you want to make a sequel.
Yeah.
One of the only cool facts I found was that they used 300 to 900 women extras for the convention scenes on each of the 3 days of shooting.
Wow.
So quite a lot of extras.
I definitely thought about that during that scene. I was like, oh gosh, for one, that's a lot of extras. But then I just was thinking about those poor women, like, how much their throats probably hurt. I know, like, they're probably not screaming all the time, but, like, I just feel like it's so much work to, like, stand there all day of shooting and I have to be like, like, you're just, like,
I'm
waving
sure
your
that
hands,
they,
jumping
I'm
around.
Sure that they were having a good time, though. It looked like, I mean, especially for the Channing Tatum one. That's probably a pretty fun
I don't
one
know.
To watch.
I don't think it would have been a good time.
Maybe if they liked Channing Tatum, though.
Like, yeah, maybe.
Maybe. They probably were fans of the first one. Too.
Probably.
So it's like, I feel like it'd be a cool experience to talk about maybe 2 weeks after when your legs have started working again. The movie apparently has a much more lukewarm reception than the first, which to me makes
There's
sense.
No
but
way.
I feel like
maybe
I
by critics.
Like, yeah, I think
like,
it was mostly critics.
Let me look at the Rotten Tomatoes scores.
It's
not
still
that
made
anything.
Good amount of money, $122 million, and it had a $14 million budget, so double the budget, but still not a ton. Like, $14 million is still pretty low from what I would expect a sequel to a $167 million movie to get. You know, like, I'm surprised they didn't get just a little bit more. But yeah, $14.8 million.
Okay, so On Rotten Tomatoes, the first movie has a 78% for
solid
critic score and a 60% okay audience score. And okay then for the second one, it has a 65% critic score. So really only dropped like around 10%.
Yeah.
And then a 55% audience score. So
maybe it's just like the Letterboxd heads that like
a difference, but
like
not much
one
of a difference. Maybe. Yeah. I don't know.
I just don't know where, like, when did this movie turn into like a cult classic? Because I feel like, I mean, even like big critics on Letterboxd have it rated high. Like Patrick Willems has it like a 9 out of 10. What's the David, his last name, the IndieWire guy?
David Ehrlich.
Yeah, it has a 5 out of 5. So I just don't know, like, when did the reclamation of Magic Mike XXL begin?
Yeah, Karsten gave it a 4.5, which is wild to me.
And if you go to, like, the top reviews, there's so many reviews you have to go through to get to a lower one, rated one. Like, it's all, like, the high rated reviews at the top.
Yeah, I don't understand it. It feels like a puzzle to me.
Yeah, it's like people are gaslighting me into thinking that people like this movie.
This is a good movie, yeah.
Okay, so just talking about this movie. So it starts off with Mike doing his... I feel like this movie would have been great if it was just him doing the furniture business. Not even any stripping. Just, like, literally custom furniture making. Would have been so good.
I think the first, like, 20 minutes or so of this movie are fine. Like, mm-hmm.
What you would expect.
He has the furniture business. It seems like he's doing well. But also, like, maybe feels... unhappy, I don't know, unfulfilled.
I guess
it's
yeah
clear he doesn't have a girlfriend anymore, but it's also unclear because it's
but also
never,
they're
like
trying to be like weird about it, like maybe they're still dating, even though if you look at the cast list you know that she's not in the movie anymore.
Yeah, and it's never fully clarified, and it's like, but then he's hitting on this other girl, so it's like, I don't know, that's kind of weird to me. But it starts and it's like, okay, well, we got to have the other guys in here somehow. So there's the whole phone call thing. And then he does that dance in the workshop. And then I think everything after that is bad. Like, I think...
I even think the dance in the workshop is a little weird. Like,
it is
it's
weird.
A little more out of place. Like, the first movie feels a lot more grounded to me. Like, when they dance... But the dance in the workshop felt more like a musical scene. Where it's like,
yeah,
okay, so people are just, he's just dancing now. Like, I can get down with the musical, but it just felt like a very different vibe than the
but
first movie.
But that was one of the better dances.
It was the best, probably the best dance in the movie. Yeah.
But it did feel a little weird. It felt a little, like, fan fiction-y. Depending on the fan fiction,
yes,
but it's
yes
like, someone imagining is like, okay, well, maybe we should, like, have him do a sexy dance in... like his workshop.
I gotta say, well, this will continue to the third movie, but this started at that dance. I feel like Mike was not this good of a dancer in the beginning. Like, I feel like he was a good, his character was supposed to be like a very good stripper. But as the movies go on, he becomes like
a professional dancer.
A professional, like, amazing dancer. I just don't know, when did he become that? Like, when was he able to do so many good big dance moves? Like,
yeah,
in the
I
first
guess
movie,
we
just
never saw it in the first one.
He just like strips and like dry humps in the first movie, and it's like, yeah, that makes sense. That's like what he would be like. But especially in the third one, it's like, wow, this is like, when did he learn to dance like this? Like, in his off hours? I just don't know.
One thing that I kept thinking was like, this dude must have a really good stretch routine every morning.
Oh, yeah.
Because the fact that he can, like, just all of a sudden jump into one of these dances and not pull a muscle. Like, even if he's just, like, working out regularly or, like, you know, running in the mornings. Like, to do this kind of dance stuff, like, you need to be stretching all the time.
Yeah.
And I was like, couldn't be
especially
me.
The
just,
third
like,
one,
waiting
where it's
for
like,
him to pull a muscle.
He's bartending all the time in the third one, but like, he must be stretching on the off hours in case anyone ever asks him for a lap dance. Like,
yeah.
I guess that's what's the point. On the second one though, the beginning also, feels a little bit like it gives off direct to DVD vibes.
Because
they can't get, they didn't have Matthew McConaughey or the kid or the girlfriend. And so there's all these lines that are being so vague or like just like dismissing these big characters from the first movie like they aren't big characters anymore. Where it's like, yeah, the what's his face? I don't remember Matthew McConaughey's character's
Dallas.
Name. Dallas and the kid went to Miami and left us. And then like the girlfriend gets one line, yeah, I proposed to her and then it didn't work out. Like it just feels like there's so much explaining away of why the main characters aren't in this sequel.
Yeah.
So that was also just gave me a weird vibe in the beginning. And then, yeah, like you said, once the road trip gets underway, it just becomes, I don't know, like they get in a car crash because they're like doing Molly and then like putting their hands together. And then they go to Annie McDowell's house for an extended like
mom
gossip session.
What a weird that and then the scene where they meet the other lady who becomes their MC, who like
when Donald Glover like decides does like a rap freestyle to like this girl.
Yeah.
Where was that? What was that house? Was that just like a fun house for like strippers? Like
I guess
it felt like an orphanage for strippers.
It felt like a sorority house to me that was just like a little more lit.
I feel like that would be, I would want to see a movie based at that house. Like all these guys living in the same house and like people come to the house and like, it's like a fun house. Like you go over here and then this guy's dancing, but then we'll go over here and you get serenaded. Like it just is, I don't know what that house was.
It didn't really like a lot of them traveling. It was like, what is happening? Because they're like, oh, we're at the beach and now, hey, I know this person. Let's go to this like fun house and see if this person that's like no one's ever talked about before remembers who I am, and then we'll go to this other house where like we know the daughter, and like it just felt like it was really like what is like they were just throwing things out of a hat like okay
yeah. And
we'll
it was,
go
and
here
the whole
next.
Time I was thinking like when are they gonna practice their routine, because like the convention's a 3 days. Like I just the whole it was the timeline was weird, and I also don't know, like I feel like in the first movie it just doesn't track with this one how he has so many like connections and also is apparently like this really big stripper name, because it feels like in the first one it was a pretty small venue and they were like scraping the bottom of the barrel to like get a bigger venue, so I just and but then he quit before they even got a bigger venue, so I just don't know when. I feel like if he was as big of a deal as they were making him out to be in this movie, he would have been stripping somewhere else, not like at the small club in Tampa.
Yeah, still.
Because like Elizabeth Banks at the end was like, he's been gone a while, but you'll know this guy for sure. I'm like, will they though? Like,
Well, I guess it's implied maybe that they've been to this convention before. Like, maybe that's what it is. Like,
oh, maybe, yeah.
Because they kind of were like, but like, they don't make that clear. You know, they could have been like, oh, this is the 5-time convention winner, Magic Mike. Like, they kind of, because when they first got there, they were like, oh, well, how do you think you're going to get in with Dallas, not here? But like, so maybe that's the case, but they didn't make that clear. So it's still very weird that like, Mike is this legendary like stripper for sure. Like I do find that strange. I was thinking that too. One thing that I really did not like about this movie, and I'm sorry to who this might offend, but I thought the friends were horrible in this movie.
They're so boring.
I feel like
one dimensional.
They're all like, I think they were good in the first movie, and I think that's because like they were such supporting characters that, like, it didn't really matter.
It was okay
really
that they
matter.
Were archetypes because they were, like, just on the side.
You really only saw them when you're at the club. And it was, like, they were just kind of in the background of a scene. Like, they weren't ever really leading a scene or in the forefront of a scene. It was kind of just, like, oh, yeah, they're doing this thing over here. And so when they were given the spotlight in this movie, I was like, these characters are so dense. I'm not interested in them at all. They're not charismatic. Except for the one, the gas station scene, and that guy. That guy was the only one that felt like he was actually characterized.
Well, but, because he was the only one that really got an arc, because I'm assuming at the end he got married to Annie McDowell, or like they went back there. That's what it kind of felt like they were trying to hint at, because he was looking for romance, I guess. But everyone else, it was just like they were just talking about their business ideas, and then that was it. They're like, yeah, I'm gonna start this probiotic yogurt truck. I was like, obviously very 2015, because like frozen yogurt, I have not heard anyone talk about frozen yogurt in like 3 years. But so I'm sure that guy did not make it through the pandemic, but
rough.
Yeah, tough time. Do we want to quickly now, just before we move on, make sure we touch on the final half hour
of this film? Yes, let's do that.
So they have a montage of them coming up with this brand new routine
in about
12 hours. And then we cut to the stripper convention where Elizabeth Banks lets them in because Jada Pinkett Smith is there, I guess. And they're like, well, I guess we'll kick these other guys out. Because, like, didn't they say, don't we have these guys at 1020? And then the guy said yes. And then they said, okay, well, you can put you in the 1020 spot. So I guess maybe they kicked...
Yeah, they kicked out the other guys.
Rough, tough beat for them. I'm sure they would have been better, because this is one of the worst... Not that I've been to many, or any, male strip shows. But if I were to go to one, I would have not given these guys any money. None. Yeah. I would have been done.
Yeah, well, and it's funny because, like, I guess the one right before was, like, they joked about it being, like, a Twilight thing. And I was like, man, I want to see that one.
Yeah, also, a little out of date, though. Like, 2015, a Twilight one? I don't know. But that one looked better for the clicks they showed.
Yeah, so clicks. They do their, like, they all come out and do a thing. And this, like this whole final sequence too. Is, like, the last 25, 30 minutes of the movie. Like,
yes.
It's all this dance.
It's like a real time, what their show would have been, I guess.
Yes. So they do that, and then each guy has a solo act, and then obviously ends with Channing Tatum with, like, a big bang. But
And another random guy that I've never met, though. Like, who is that other guy?
Yeah, I guess he, like, was the guy that danced with him at the fun house.
Like, wasn't it just one of the other five guys, though? Like, I feel like... Why?
Because okay. None of the other five guys can actually dance.
Yeah, that's true.
That's why. But the whole time all the other guys were performing, I just kept thinking, like, you're just waiting for Channing Tatum. It's like you're watching them perform, not for them to perform, but to be like, gotta get through this before Channing Tatum comes on. But their performances were horrible. And
They were, like, the least sexy scenes I've ever seen.
I was like, damn, they should have... Dallas was right. They should have done Dallas's choreography. And
like, the painting one? What was that? What was that scene? Like, does anyone find that appealing? I don't know.
I have no words. Yeah, the painting one, and then, like, Matt Bomer sings a song, which this whole thing felt like just a way to have Matt Bomer sing. And then...
The candy one, when, like, the guy, like, lays on top of them on the park bench.
Oh, yeah, with his, like, he did, like, frozen yogurt, and then he, like, sprays them with whipped cream.
He did do that.
And then,
The wedding one was kind of cool. Like, that was at least a cool idea.
Well, he felt like he had maybe a little bit more dance experience than the other guys. Like, it felt like he actually was, like, felt like to me what, like, maybe Magic Mike was in the first movie. Like, he isn't a dancer, but
he knows what he's doing.
He knows what he's doing, and he's more of, like, a frontline stripper. Like,
yes.
That is kind of the vibe I got. Like, he's better than these other guys, but he's not Magic Mike level, but he's, like, still a good stripper. Like, that was kind of the vibe I got from him.
Yeah.
Which, again, is probably why he had the better storyline than the others. Is that all of them? I feel like I'm missing
someone.
Well,
then someone. There was Channing Tatum. Then it was his. I guess the point of it was... Because the movie's all about them, like, moving on from this life and, like, doing what they actually want to do, with the rest of their lives and like doing the frozen yogurt and singing and painting and getting married. And so the point was, I guess, that each of their routines was supposed to be or like represent that, you know. But the problem is that the routines just aren't good. So like, I get the point, but it doesn't matter if the routines just suck. It's like, oh, that's cool. He's doing this because he wants to paint in the future. But then why doesn't he just paint in the future and not do a strip like act about painting? Like, I just don't, I don't understand.
Yeah, it would make really more sense if they, like, quit.
Just do a regular show. Why didn't they just do a regular show and then just do what you want? I don't know.
Yeah, instead of the whole, like, strip convention thing.
Also, the strip convention, awful set piece. Just really, it looks like a hotel. Like, convention center. Like, that's what it is, but they don't make it look any different. They shoot the dances really badly. Like I was saying to you, it felt like they were just had to use a lot of coverage because they don't really do much like interesting things with the editing that the other two movies do with the dances. So it's just a really painful.
Which is crazy because didn't Soderbergh shoot and edit this?
He edited it. I don't think he directed it. He didn't direct it.
No, but
it,
he
though.
Shot it. He was a cinematographer.
He was, yes. So I don't know, maybe, I have no idea. Like, it just does not look good at all. So it just is like you're watching these awful scenes, but then they don't even do anything with the editing or the cinematography to make them look cooler.
And then the very end.
And then it's capped.
The very end is like, they start, like, he does his routine, which was pretty good.
It's the best one of the five.
I don't think it was his best dance in the movie. And then it had, again, the, like, Amber Heard character that was like,
and, like,
who is
you smiled,
this girl?
Finally. Like, I was like, okay.
Kind of weird. And then it, like, his performance goes into All I Do Is Win, which, like... Of all
and then they
the songs,
walk the Myrtle Beach. Then they walk the Myrtle Beach strip in slow mo.
Yeah, and it's like this weird montage in the end where they're like on the boardwalk and then go stand up, and it just is like still playing All I Do Is Win out of all the songs. And then they like lean up on this banister, and you're supposed to be like, what? Like happy for
you
them?
You know what it reminded me
know.
Of? It reminded me that they were trying to redo the Ocean's 11 ending when they like do the heist and then they're all
sure.
looking. But the problem is that Ocean's 11 has a satisfying ending. And so you feel like when you're watching that, you're like, wow, they really did it. They did the heist.
This
but
is
this
genuinely
time you're
one
it,
of the dumbest. And like you hadn't watched the ending by the time I watched it. And I just was like, this is one of the dumbest things I've ever seen. Like, I feel like I'm getting brain rot watching the last 25 minutes
all
of these movies.
All I do movies. Is win, no matter what. Yeah. And the ironic thing is, they didn't win because their routine was trash. So, they didn't win.
Yeah,
all
but
lose.
It looks like they implied that they won. I don't know.
Oh, no, yeah. Well, the show in the movie killed. Like, the people loved it. But in reality, it wouldn't kill because that was a terrible show. So it's just so funny because you spend 25 minutes watching one of the most like awful dance scenes of all time. And then it cuts to All I Do Is Win and then go to credits. It's like, all right, sounds good, guys. That's glad, happy for you, I guess. And that's the end of the movie.
Wow.
And no conclusion at all. Like, does he get together with Amber Heard? I don't know. Does anyone get their, did they get their yogurt shop? Does he paint? Does he get married to Andy McDowell? Guess we'll never know. Like, it's so weird that they didn't, I don't know.
Yeah, there's like no set conclusion to the movie at all.
Which like, at least the first movie, like I said, the conclusion is abrupt, but it does feel like it isn't ending. Like, maybe I would have wanted it to end, to have a couple more scenes. This movie just feels like they just ran out of money, and they couldn't shoot anything else. And so they were like, all right, let's just shoot some scenes on the Myrtle Beach boardwalk, and that will be the ending of the movie, and we'll use a little of the budget to get All I Do Is Win, and that will slay in the theater. Yeah.
Right.
I don't really want to talk about this movie anymore. Let's go to an ad break, and then we'll talk about Magic Mike's Last Dance.
And we're back.
Magic Mike's Last Dance, baby. We made it. We've seen a lot of dances by Magic Mike, but this will be his last.
The very last one. Even though, like, they kept saying, like, that was his last dance, that was his last dance, but then he just kept dancing.
Oh, man. Do you want to read this synopsis I have here?
Sure.
I wrote this, by the way.
Oh,
okay. This is mine.
The COVID-19 pandemic destroyed a lot of things, among them Mike Lane's custom furniture business. However, when he meets the host of a charity event he is bartending, he gets another chance at stardom, this time off the stage. Will he be able to assemble a team of male entertainers and create one of the greatest strip shows of all time? Or will this truly be Magic Mike's last dance?
I really like that opening of that synopsis, because it just is as abrupt as I felt the opening was, where the narration was like, after the COVID-19 pandemic, Mike Lane could not keep his business afloat anymore. I'm like, oh, all right, cool, sounds good. I will continue to not get used to when COVID is a plot point in movies. Like, it's just like, oh,
yeah,
right.
Especially when, like, in this, when it's mentioned and then it just disappears, like COVID was magically eradicated or something.
Yeah.
And it's like, you use it as a plot point because I guess it's easier than saying his, like, business just failed normally.
Yeah, maybe just no one wanted, like, tables with, like, random shit as the legs. I don't think it just doesn't seem like an unlogical conclusion that a custom furniture business just couldn't.
Yeah,
make
and then
it,
he's
but
just like a random bartender. I don't know. It felt very like weird. Like, it almost felt like they had to start the movie somewhere, and they were like, I don't know what to do with all this like other baggage that he has. So maybe we should just like restart, but he's a bartender. And we'll kind of just forget all this other stuff that happened. Like, that was how it felt like the movie started.
Yeah, it was like, all right, I guess we're starting from scratch now. Which, so the beginning is definitely a little abrupt. I mean, we're not talking about every plot point. So just quickly, this was announced on November 29th, 2021. We were talking about marketing, so I just wanted to mention this. Marketing was largely done with TV spots on Warner Brothers Discovery channels. iSpot estimated that Warner Brothers spent just under $9 million on the TV spots. Similar to the second movie, it's having a mixed reception, which we'll get to. And though last year Soderbergh announced that there are developments for ongoing additional installments for the franchise, just not centered on Mike Lane, which again feels like the only thing that really keeps these movies going. Like,
unless they have someone who's like as charismatic, I just don't see it working.
No. It's like he's the reason that these movies, any of these movies work. Or any parts of the movies work. All right. So, box office wise, we're recording this on Sunday. So, it's like we don't have a ton. People are saying it looks like it's going to get about $8 million opening weekend, which is honestly not good. Like, I know people are saying it's good, but I feel like we'll talk about it. I feel like they could have gotten so much more.
If
they had marketed this movie. Oh, wait. Okay. I searched Magic Mike online, and the first question from Google is Magic Mike appropriate for a 14-year-old? And then you open it up and says, please note that Magic Mike Live is strict. Oh, Magic Mike Live? Las Vegas? It's a Magic Mike Live show? Anyway, sorry. I just thought that was funny. Anyway, marketing. Yes, back on topic.
Yeah, I think one thing that's so weird about this movie is I don't understand why they only did, like, TV spots for marketing. Like, I feel like this is something they should have marketed on, like, TikTok and
Facebook.
Instagram.
Facebook would have been huge.
obviously, we've talked about before with Titanic and other stuff, Top Gun, Maverick, is that, like, studios still, for some reason, cannot figure out how to market movies to women. Like, they underestimate the audience, the demographic, being able to sell tickets, and I don't think they can comprehend, like, I don't know if they think that only dudes went and saw Top Gun Maverick or something, but, like,
or Magic Mike 1 and 2.
But, like, women drive those sales, and I'll stand behind that until the day I die, is that, like, if they had marketed this properly, because, so, my AMC, strangely, did not get this movie. I don't really understand why, because I feel like this is a big movie. But, yeah, AMC didn't screen it. The Alamo did, and originally they only had a couple show times, but they added a bunch, I guess. And almost, the one I went to was a matinee Saturday, so I went to the 12:40 showing, and it was pretty full. Like, I mean, it wasn't packed, but, like,
mine
each
was
row
too.
Had,
like,
a
yeah.
good amount of people in it, and...
For 12:30? I was 12:30. Which one was, what time was
mine
yours?
Was 12:40.
Yeah,
so, yeah,
that's crazy.
And, but when I looked at the app, the seating selections, it had, like, six or seven other screenings that day, and almost all of them were basically almost completely sold out. And so I'm like, if this is happening in my theater, and it's one of the only theaters around here showing the movie, then, like, I feel like in Winchester, Virginia, this movie is selling out almost every showing. Like, why was this not marketed more heavily? I don't know. I don't really understand, because I just think it could have made so much more money if they actually, like, cared that women go watch movies.
All right, I'm looking at the seat. There's three show times today we have by us for this film. This is a Super Bowl Sunday. And all three have about half the seats sold out, including the 6:30, which is, like, the Super Bowl. So it's like,
yeah. Let
this,
me look.
I feel like this movie.
I feel like they
could
have done a whole thing that's like a whole marketing campaign that's like, while your husband is watching
yes.
the Super Bowl,
wow.
Have like, you know, like a whole like, oh,
go see a real
boy,
man.
Like, could you imagine a commercial where they're like, they show like the husbands all together like watching the Super Bowl, and then it's like. The ladies kind of like sneak out and they're going to see like Magic Mike's Last Dance. And it's like, wow. Ladies, this is your Super Bowl. Like, I feel like it could have been marketed
yes.
as this whole
it's
like.
It's his like the Last Dance title. So, so
yeah. So
final.
The 12:40 for mine, it definitely is less people seeing it today. The 12:40 one is pretty full for a 12:40 on a Sunday. The other one's not as much, but I think that's just probably because of the Super Bowl around
yeah.
here. But I just think, like, I mean, in my theater, there were two dudes.
I only saw one, and he was about, like, 65 at least.
There may have been someone I didn't notice, but there was one guy who was probably around my age with his girlfriend, and then there was, like, an older guy who was, like, with his wife. And then the rest
Valid.
Of the theater was middle-aged women over the age of 40. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, there were
yeah,
a few younger people.
Yeah, that was a lot
people,
of mine, too.
But, like,
I would say 30 and up for me.
Yeah, I would say 65% of the theater was women, like, over the age of 40. Like, older women.
Yeah, I would agree.
And I just feel like... Like, what movies are they supposed to go see? I just am like, why don't we make more movies for them? And why aren't we trusting them to
you,
go see
this
movies?
This was one of the best crowds I've seen in a movie
Same.
Theater in quite a while.
They
Same. Were great. They were
they,
great.
They when they
I,
were
laughing. I'm always laughing at stuff in theaters and no one else laughs. But this time, I was laughing and they were laughing. I was like, wow.
They played
what a communal
that trailer
experience.
For, oh shit, what's that movie? That kid's movie coming out, the Judy Blume, like, Dear God, it's me. You know what I'm talking about?
No.
Okay, well, they played that trailer
They didn't like the trailers.
And they were laughing at the trailers. And I was like,
oh yeah, well,
great.
They showed the one, the Woody Harrelson basketball one. They loved that trailer.
You didn't show that one. But I was
they loved it.
But the fact that they were laughing at the trailers, I was like, this is going to be a great crowd. And then they were like laughing when the guy that wasn't even a character, like with a name, did that dance, like the actual dancer that she found on like Instagram or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
When he did his solo dance as part of the rehearsal,
yes.
People were like clapping for
him. Oh yeah,
and cheering.
I had claps too.
And
taking off their shirts. Woo!
Yeah, like, and I just think, I don't know. Like, I am disappointed that studios don't care enough to market to this demographic. Because I feel like if they had
especially because it was Valentine's Day weekend. Like, I feel like they could have played up the Valentine's Day thing a lot more.
Well, and a lot of women do, like, Galentine's Day.
Yes!
I feel like this could have been marketed as a Galentine's Day movie. Like, are you going to... And, like, did Channing Tatum do any press for this movie? I feel like
I haven't seen anything besides, like, just trailers. No.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe because it was supposed to be just an HBO Max release, and then, like, summer last year, they changed it. So maybe they just didn't have as many marketing strategies in place. But we just came up with so many ideas in 15 minutes.
Yeah, we
should probably talk about the movie a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was fun. Obviously, the plot is pretty simple, standard. Mm-hmm. Like,
it's definitely one of the most straightforward, like, of the three. All three of these movies feel so different. Like, they do not feel like they are in the same series.
No, not at all.
It's like a rom-com plotline.
Which I think worked. I think at this point, if they were to do something too serious, it just wouldn't work for this franchise. Mm-hmm. I think obviously they leaned into Channing Tatum more in this movie as like actually letting him carry the movie on his back, which he did in the other ones. But I feel like they tried to do other things with other characters. And I think this one, it helped that they were just like, oh, yeah, this is Channing Tatum's movie. So it's more about 100%. Him. I didn't find the romance to be super believable.
Mm. I didn't really like, they didn't have much chemistry.
I felt like they just didn't have the chemistry necessary. It's funny because I felt like he had more chemistry with the like random girl actress that like was in this, who ended up being the MC. Like I felt like their screen time, I felt way more chemistry between them. And, like, I was obviously rooting for him to get the girl and all that. But, like, because Channing Tatum is charismatic. But I just felt like I didn't find their relationship very believable just because they didn't have the chemistry.
Yeah, I agree. That was probably my main thing. It's, like, I think if that was a lot stronger, I would have been more invested in the story. But I still, like, I thought it was fun. Because I wasn't invested in the romance, I would have really liked more just focus on the, putting the show together.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would have really liked to see a lot more behind the scenes of that.
Yeah, I like that kind of stuff.
More. I just didn't really care about, like, them in the car or, like, them at a dinner. Like, that isn't what I was excited about seeing. But I really liked that stuff, and I loved, like, some of the side characters, like Victor. Loved that. He was great.
Everyone in my theater, like, any line that he said, it was like they laughed at.
You know, I rewatched last night cinematic masterpiece, The Princess Diaries. And Joe in that movie, same
iconic
vibes.
Yeah.
The same vibes as Victor. Like, these quiet dudes that always are so wise. They're just standing on the side, and they just have all the knowledge. Love it. Victor for life.
I did laugh out loud at his Downton Abbey joke. I thought that was really funny. I think the dances in this were really good because they hired real dancers.
Yeah.
To be in this movie. I didn't like the whole like montage thing where they were like trying to hire these dancers. I was like, I don't know.
Yeah, it was a little too montagey. Yeah.
But
Channing Tatum just doing the same laugh over and over, like just laughing the whole montage.
I did think it was good that like they sort of diversified the cast a little bit. Mm-hmm. They did that a little bit in the second one.
I guess the first one it makes sense because it is Florida.
Yeah, so, but I thought that was good. I thought the dancing was good. I thought they shot the dance sequences a little bit better for the most part. Like, you actually were able to kind of get some of the dances. I don't know why they kept doing the, like, side angle shots.
Oh, yeah. I kind of thought those were kind of cool. Like, in the Magic Mike stance in the beginning, when it was, like, the side, I was like, oh, wow.
Yeah, cool. I just thought it was, like, overdone, I guess. I think the final, just like, let's just do it. Like, show was good.
It was great. Definitely, I would go to that show 100%.
Definitely better than the other. But, like, when it started and they were doing the whole, like, unicorn bit thing, I was like, oh, this is great.
It was,
like,
so funny.
This is fun. And, like,
but you know, it was, like, I feel like the second movie, people really like the, like, the theme of the woman pleasure theme. That's, like, why people like the second. I think this movie does that so much better. Because it's so much more focused on, like, that as part of the show. This, I just feel like the second movie, it feels a lot more just, like, shoehorned in right at the end by the MC. When she says all those things, like, you deserve a man, that's this and this. But this movie, it felt like actually, like, a real integral part of the plot. And it was, like, what they were talking about making the show more about that. I don't know. I just thought that this movie was so much better at that theme than the second
one. And I think maybe I'm overreaching here, but I think they showed that well with the lady who was, like, the councilwoman or whatever.
Love that girl.
Because I think they kind of were, like showing that she's sort of a prude almost, like, at the beginning. Like, that was kind of the idea. But it was kind of like, these women deserve fun too. Like, that was how I felt, like, when they did the dance on the bus. Yeah. Oh, and when everyone in my theater ate that dance up.
That was
a bus.
Great dance. Yeah.
But then, like, they chose her at the end, and I felt like just the little things like that proved that better. Like, it was like I didn't feel like they were judging her or, like, judging any of these women. It was kind of like, you know, they were saying, like, well, every woman wants something or, like, like something or enjoys something. And I felt like they did that in a way that was good. Like, I feel like kind of maybe in the first one, obviously the culture is different, but I feel like it is a little bit more demeaning about women and kind of, like, picking up women. And the second one is just all over the place. But I feel like in
the second
one,
I think they don't characterize any women men really either, besides Annie McDowell.
But I feel like in this one, it really worked. And I feel like it didn't feel like they were being, I don't know. Like, I felt like it was wholesome vibes.
It was very wholesome.
Like, even though it's about sex and all that.
Like, the chair dance, that was a wholesome
scene.
Yeah,
and, like, being, like, talking about consent and permission. I was like, great. Wow. I love this.
I liked the little unicorn dollars, too. I thought that was a really
fun
touch.
Yeah, those were funny. Yeah, I liked this movie better than I liked both of the other movies.
This movie's pretty fun. It's a fun movie.
Which I'm definitely, definitely in the minority with this. Because this movie, I feel like all these people who gave the second one 4.5 stars and gave this one, like, 3, I don't know what is going on in their brains. Because this movie felt more cohesive than the second one, by far.
Well,
because
I guess if you like the second one, I think it's because of the camaraderie of the guys.
Sure.
And so, obviously, that was not a selling point for either of us. But I guess, so, like, if that's why you like the first movie, the second movie a lot, then this movie is, like, 100%, like, a completely different story.
Sure.
But I thought this was, it was a really fun movie. I thought it was a great, just, like, February watch at the theater. Great crowd. I would definitely recommend seeing this, like, in the first couple weeks when there's, like, people still, like, seeing it a lot, because I think that was really fun. There were two just things I wanted to point out, because one thing just really bugged me, which was the Zoom call. Why was the Zoom call so glitchy? Like, maybe were they trying to be realistic? Like,
I guess.
It's a movie. So why would they just not make it good connections, like, just write in that they have good connections. I don't know why.
That's a good point.
They decided to make it, like, everyone's screens had, like, 2-second delays. They would be paused. Like, could we not afford just, like, to shoot each scene individually?
I don't know. I feel like that's very Soderbergh, though, to be like,
it is very Soderbergh. Yeah,
realistic.
Right. It just is annoying me because, like, they kept, like, their faces kept freezing, and I was like, I just don't need this. Maybe I'm just like been jaded by Zoom. You know, like I think Zoom calls just give me anxiety now. Like the freezing. And then the other thing was, in the show, do you feel like there was just like they did that joke of with the daughter too many times? Because they made that joke like 6 times.
Yeah.
I was like, why? They should have made. Why did they just make the joke so many times? It was just too much.
They
of a joke.
Overdid. I do think I liked the daughter, but I do.
No, I thought she was good.
I do feel like they leaned in too hard into like, oh, she's Gen Z. Like,
she's like, I could search this person up, no problem.
Yeah, like I feel like they definitely leaned into that a little bit too much. Yeah. Like. Maybe it
she
was
a good style though,
but I do think her character worked well, was a good addition to the movie and the script.
What did you think about the daughter's voiceover?
You know,
why
wild choice.
Like, what was she supposed to be reading? Like her mom's biography, or
I don't know, maybe the book, like, she was writing.
It felt really like last minute they were like, we don't have enough context, so we just need some voiceover here to explain things.
Yeah, I definitely don't know that is what I would have, how I would have told the story. But I guess, I don't know, I'm not one for narration anyway. So
it was kind of interesting they were trying to like tell the story of dance, I guess, maybe like what dance means to people. I feel
I
like
know.
You could have had that
I
without
think
the
it didn't
though.
Work as well.
It was weird.
Yeah.
And I also didn't realize who it was that was talking until like the last 15 minutes.
Yeah, until like
and
her
like,
third
oh,
her like
right,
third voiceover.
Yeah, I was like, "Oh yeah, that's the daughter's voice." Okay, now I know who this is. I thought we were going to get like a reveal at the end that she was reading an audiobook or something.
Yeah, I that would have been funny.
Like written by Mike and the woman, like their audio.
One thing I did want to say is I was glad that like once she bought him clothes, that, like, he wore clothes that actually fit him. Because, like,
that was nice.
I have never seen a guy wear so many, like, way oversized shirts. Like,
why?
These
yeah,
shirts
or those
he was,
pants, those khakis he was wearing in that first dance scene were, like,
wild.
Falling off.
Yeah.
They were falling off.
Yeah, and, like, then later when he's, like, wearing the nice Dickies, I was like, good. We
His
got
style
here.
Was great. When he walked out of that store...
Yeah, I was like, good, we finally have clothes that fit this man, because in every other movie, he's, like, trying to, like, I don't know, look like Adam Sandler, like, he's wearing
He's trying
shirts.
To look like 2012. It's, like, stuck,
shirts
still stuck in that 2012
style. Go down
to
his knees, like, the long, and then the big scoop neck shirt, and it's like, okay.
Yeah, he loves them. He loves those. I mean, he was, like, a carpenter or, like, a handyman, roofer. I feel like he is a little bit, like... blue collar style sometimes.
Yeah, but I feel like blue collar is like, maybe, I don't know, it's better now, but it's like, you know, we got the Carhartts and the
I
like...
just feel like, you know, he probably hadn't had a girlfriend in a while. He had no he did not have a sense of style, like,
yeah,
at all.
I just think that
he had,
opening the opening scene, I just felt like I had to comment on this, but he was wearing those like baggy, I mean they were Carhartts but they were like baggy, but then he
those
had the
were,
like
very
baggy. He had, like, that baseball, like, raglan tee, but it, like, it came all the way down, like, past his butt, and I was like, why are we wearing this long-ass shirt? Like, wear a shirt that accentuates your muscles, please.
Why is his neck so thick, too? That scene, I was like, that is a thick neck that man has. It's very big.
He's got a lot of muscle. He's built.
He does. He is built. I think that's a great way to leave off our Magic Mike discussion. Final review, you know, is magic the word I would use to describe the series? Probably not, but
yeah.
There are highs, there are lows, and there are the middling things, I guess. I don't know. I feel like the first movie is good, not good enough to be talked about as much as it is, and the second movie is just an anomaly that I just won't understand, I guess. I'm just not meant to understand. And then the third movie just feels like a regular, like,
fun
rom-com, I guess.
To watch in the theater.
So it's just weird, like, how different all three movies
Yeah, totally feel. Different tones in all three movies.
Yeah. Which, I mean, you know, definitely just doesn't feel like a trilogy. Like, I feel like they're dubbing this as the end of the trilogy. It does not feel like this, like,
yeah,
I watched,
yeah, they all
like,
feel so disjointed apart from Channing Tatum. Like...
Yeah,
he's the definitely. Only through line in all three of them.
Yeah, so, I mean, I would say, even if you haven't seen the other two, I would see Magic Mike's Last Dance. I think it's...
Yeah, and like, I don't you think you need no to see what. The first two to see it, which I think they could have marketed to.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I would say go see it. Definitely, like, I hope word of mouth has people going to see it next weekend. Whether or not the film people liked it, I think general audiences love this movie. Yeah. I could tell based on my theater. So I would say, yeah, next weekend, I mean, if you don't go see movies during the week, but like at least next weekend, try to hit up this movie while it's still in the theater. I'm sure they'll pull it sooner. They'll probably pull it by like the end of February, I bet.
Yeah, unfortunately. And I think this could be like a real big event movie if they, because like that ending 30 minutes is just similar to the second, like the show. But I think the show is really good.
Yeah.
And so, like, that's, I think, it could be a really fun, like, thing to rewatch. So it's unfortunate that doesn't seem like that will be the case. But once it's in theaters, definitely go check it out.
Yeah.
Okay, with that, our question of the week is going to be, what is your favorite movie with dance sequences? We said dance sequences because it doesn't just mean dance movies. So, like, it doesn't have to be about the dancing. So it doesn't have to be Footloose or Dirty Dancing. But, like, anything. So you could say a musical... or just anything that has dance sequences in it.
Yeah, a movie with a great number. So this could obviously
One, two,
be
three, four.
High School Musical 2.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Magic Mike XXL,
It could
perhaps.
Be. It could be.
Probably will be for some people if we ask them this. Yeah, let us know. I think there's a lot of great dance sequences out there, old and new. So let us know what you come up with. We'll read those in our next episode, which is on... Kayla's most anticipated film of 2023. Ant-Man, Quantumania.
Rough. Yeah. Well, yeah, if you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you know I've spoke of this movie many a time. Unfortunately, I don't think it'll live up to my expectations from years ago.
Early reviews are not hot.
And it looks bad. The trailer was not good. The clips that have come out in the past couple weeks are not good. The fact that here is what, I figured it was going to be bad. The thing that really sold me on this being a horrible movie, you know what that was?
Was it when, like, The Soups guy
was when
like,
Soups said
it looks like a good episodic movie.
I was like, if this guy can't even say that it's a good movie, like the ultimate fanboy, I was like, well, rough.
We're out.
We'll be talking about it. I'll be getting my popcorn and soda for this movie.
Will it be ant? Popcorn, like really tiny popcorn.
That would be exciting.
Down to ant size.
That would be fun.
That'd be fun if they sold like little ant food.
And we'll probably have a guest on this.
Yeah.
We just need to confirm with our guest.
Yeah, we need someone to lighten up the episode because it might be a little bit
depressing
of a downer.
Unfortunately.
But at least we'll see our boy Jonathan Majors. I always love seeing
him.
He'll
still be hot regardless. That cannot, no matter how bad a movie it is, it can't change how hot Jonathan Majors is. So,
and Paul Rudd isn't bad either. So I feel like they're good. I mean, we all have a few anti-vaxxers in the movie. But
rip.
You know, Jonathan Majors and Paul Rudd offsets it, maybe. Yeah, so come listen to that episode next week. Even if you don't watch the movie, I'm sure it will be a nice... ranting session.
Yeah.
And until then, follow us on social media, the Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. You can answer that question of the week that we talked about on any of those, or on Spotify if you have used that to listen to the podcast. Wherever you may be, we will find you. I think that's it though from Magic Mike Studios.
Great. Perfect.
So thank you all for listening, and until next time, I am Divine Wood.
And I'm Smooth Dingo.
And we're
your
second hand.
Boom. Boom.